surpass penetrating and is rarely met with even in 100,000 million copper. Except I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Morning, everybody. Well, I don't know how much of a talk I have left in me today, so I'll read you a poem instead. When the pandemic hit and my first trip was canceled, I realized, aha, I could write poems now. So I finished one book-length poem I had been working on for a while but never able to find the time to finish, and then I wrote two more book-length poems. One of them's been published, the other one not yet. Then I started writing short poems, and so all of them are called poem, but some of them have, in parentheses afterward, a little phrase, so I can tell them one from the other. So this one is called Poem Seed Pods. Seed pods, rose buds, and road beds. One hidden piece infuses the city at twilight, and the blinds of the day lower in the tall buildings, eyelids flutter, people huddle seeking rest in hope of natural dawn, as never-ending tales are told, just as if no tale at all had ever before been told, in endless tongue tellings. Measured breathing, deep and long. Some look up, others down, some across to obstructed or open views. Sun appears on another side of the earth, newly bright. There's dark here. The steady state of space marooned upon itself and alone, but for what fills it in the directions, viewpoints proliferate with eyes open and shut. Everywhere the scene is seen amid the general silence. The human body's cynosure waits to reveal itself to the beloved, yet unborn. Well, that was pretty good. Here's another one. Oh, you didn't hear that? Oh, that's too bad. Would I read it again? Of course, I'll read it again, yes. But I might put my microphone closer. It doesn't matter. I keep telling you this. It doesn't matter whether you can hear what I say. I keep saying this. Nobody ever believes me. It really doesn't matter. Yeah, you didn't hear me say that. Nobody ever hears anything I say. I'm so mad about that. Read it again. Really? Read it again. Okay. It takes so long to read, though. It's a little, okay, poem, seed pods. I'll read it differently. Seed pods. Seed pods, rose buds, and road beds. One hidden piece. Can you hear? One hidden piece. P-E-A-C-E, in case you were wondering. One hidden piece infuses the city at twilight, and the blinds of the day lower in the tall buildings, eyelids flutter. People huddle seeking rest in hope of natural dawn, as never-ending tales are told, just as if no tale at all had ever before been told in endless tongue-tellings. Measured breathing deep and long, some look up, others down, some across to obstructed or open views. Sun appears on another side of the earth, newly bright. There's dark here. The steady state of space marooned upon itself and alone, but for what fills it in the directions. Viewpoints proliferate with eyes open and shut. Everywhere the scene is seen amid the general silence. The human body's cynosure waits to reveal itself to the beloved yet unborn. Okay? Everybody heard that? Okay, good. Here's the next one. This one I should explain. Do you know what swell trains are? Well, swell trains are, I don't know what causes them exactly, but they're waves way out in the ocean. You know, waves we see, white cap breaking waves we see at shore, right? And in the ocean, you don't see white caps, you see waves. Sometimes there's these breaking waves out in the middle of the ocean, and they appear one after the other in a kind of rhythm. And they're called swell trains. And in this poem, they're called specifically long period northwest swell trains, meaning they're fairly far apart. And so we live on the ocean, and I look at the ocean all the time, and you never see swell trains. But this one day, there were swell trains on the ocean. Very surprising. So this is poem, Swell Trains. Some wafting feathers in a corner, dot, dot, dot. So this is like freestanding something. Some wafting feathers in a corner. Let's think about religion, your religion, mine, the non-religion of the religious, in which God speaks in thunder to the multitudes, in braided words, in rumbles. Suddenly, sun lights up a room. There is more brightness in deep space than was previously reckoned. A tree outside, as if it had burst into flames, reality calling out through I that still works to bring skyscape into view, ear that still affords nearness of windsong. Such words that took thousands of years to arrive calls out with particular demands that are not unserious. You have to live. It must matter. Let those waves out there long period northwest swell trains wash over your head, you're here. So, good Shabbos, everybody. Today is Shabbat. Did you know?
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Since our rabbi is here, we get to celebrate Shabbat. We lit the candles last night, and we bless the wine, and we welcome the Sabbath with blessings and sweetness and light. Shabbat is a quiet day. It is a weekly mandated day of retreat. It is commanded that you do no work on this day, and that the day be spent in contemplation of the divine and in gratitude for the gift of life that we have been miraculously given. Also, it is the last full day of our session, so we can rest today. No more struggles, no more worries. Today we can let our sitting sit us, and we can sit effortlessly at the acupuncture needle point of Zazen in the middle of the turning world, just like Dogen recommends. Maybe if Dogen had been Jewish, you can imagine a Jewish Dogen, he might have said that Zazen itself is Shabbat, the needle point of peace and rest that lies at the dynamic heart of every moment. So while I was thinking about this, it reminded me of the prayer that I told you all a while about, when I was repeating this prayer every day when I was in the middle of my old man problems. This prayer, more or less in English, goes like this, as I remember it. Blessed are you, our God, King of the universe. In your great wisdom, you created us with tubes and tubes and tubes, and hollows and hollows and hollows. And if even one of them should become ruptured or blocked, we would not be able to stand in your sacred presence at the foot of your glorious throne. Blessed are you, Lord our God, who heals and creates miracles. This is a prayer that is said every day, and particularly when you leave the bathroom. But it's said every morning anyway, in the morning service. And this prayer reminds you that Jews are famous, perhaps justly or unjustly, for being very aware of all the things that can go wrong. The human body, for instance, is a staggeringly astonishing contraption that does amazing things. And operates at a level of complexity that I think so far no one has comprehended. Smart as the human brain, a little organ in the human body, has caused us to be. There are things that can go wrong with the human body that we don't even know about, that do go wrong all the time. Every day, things are constantly going wrong with the body. But the body is so intelligent that it adjusts on a moment-by-moment basis to almost all these things that go wrong. So we don't even know that they're going wrong. We feel like everything is fine. But then there are the things that go wrong that we cannot help but notice, because our bodies will produce pains and other weird sensations to let us know that something is awry. And as we get older, there are more likely to be more things like that that will go wrong in the body. And then we'll turn our attention to those different things and we'll take care of them one after the other. Sometimes those things are fixed by our own body, just by itself. Or maybe they're fixed by our body with the help of our brilliant and knowledgeable doctors and generations of researchers who figured stuff out, and all the drug companies that produce the medications that make the adjustments that they figured out. And so we learn how to manage our condition, and the body keeps on going and we're still alive. My mother-in-law lived into her 90s, and at the end, her entire social life consisted of her friendships with her various doctors, who were practically the only people she ever saw besides her close family members. She would bring them flowers and candy, and they were her good friends. My mother-in-law didn't take that many medications, but a lot of us do. You take this one to correct the malady, and this other one to correct the problem caused by the one that you took to create the malady, and so on, till pretty soon you have quite a number of them, which you have to take with you wherever you travel. Maybe you remember your underwear, but you certainly remember your many bottles of pills and lotions and whatnot that you have to take with you. And you find that you're spending a lot of time on your self-care, keeping track of your medications, your healthy diet, which involves a certain amount of work, your exercise every day. Maybe after you do all that, you have a little time left over to read for half an hour before you go to bed. But that's mostly what you do. But it is very hard when you are old, and then a little older, and still older, to forget about how the body is so vulnerable. You didn't used to, but now you walk and you think, well, what if I fall? And you drive, if you can drive, and you think, suppose I nod off and crash on Highway 1 around one of those curves where you go over. You constantly have it in the back of your mind. Hopefully you manage to put it pretty far back in the back of your mind, but it's there. The absolute certainty that in not too long a time, something is going to be happening that really can't be fixed. And then you will find yourself in constant consultations with doctors and maybe in and out of hospitals and conversations with relatives about how you are going to manage a dicey, losing medical battle until the body, which is so smart, will naturally want to go home. As we say, the four great elements return to their own natures like a baby taking to its mother. And we're all hoping that when the time comes, we will be okay with following the body's lead, and that we won't fall apart in our heart or in our mind, although you never know. I can hear my dear friend Phil Whalen that I talked about the other day. I'm always thinking about Philip. I can hear him saying, as he often did, "All these years of expensive Zen training and I'm still like this?" I think the worst part about serious illness is the part where we don't know exactly what is going on or what to expect. Maybe we'll live, maybe not. Maybe they fixed it, maybe they didn't. Who's to say we won't have another episode and a worse one at any time? Or that something else we didn't even think about will happen because of the vulnerabilities in the body created by all the other things that have gone wrong, the things we're worried about. Maybe something we're not even worried about happens. Maybe we have this, maybe we have that. We don't know for sure. We have symptoms. Maybe they're nothing. Should we even mention them to anybody? Maybe we're just making them up, you know. It's all psychological anyway. Isn't the body just the mind after all anyway? Forget it. Or maybe not. Maybe this time it's really serious. We better check it out. Or maybe we'd rather not check it out because once they start ordering the tests, you know, there's no end to it. And we're back and forth and back and forth. And do we really want to know anyway? But it's harder not to know. It's too nerve-wracking. So we want to know. Now we're waiting. You know, we say it becomes already a slogan, like an advertisement, you know, not knowing is most intimate. Really? It's hard not to know. You can be really scared. You can be so scared, you don't even feel scared because it's too much to be scared. But in between, you know, the fear and the not fear, you feel a lot. You feel a lot of gratitude. You feel a lot of love. You feel a lot of sorrow. You're worried about the people you love. How are they going to manage? And you really start to notice how odd time is. This is your life. How did that happen so fast? How much longer will it last? Is there such a thing as a long time or a short time? Sometimes we think, it's too late. It's too late for this or that. Old age is a tremendous thing. If life is about being attractive and productive, then there's a big mistake in the arrangements. Because we reach our maximum of that productivity and attractiveness maybe at the age of 35 or 40, and then after that we're going down, and we're still alive, and just going down and down and down. But if life is about understanding and the cultivation of a loving heart, then the arrangements couldn't be more perfect. Because the older we get, the more we can understand and the deeper we can love. And our body's condition of vulnerability really helps us in that process. That is, if we don't cooperate with our old conditioned habit of running away from fear and denying the unknown. Zazen is such a big help. To sit in the middle of time, not knowing who or what you are, is great training for facing our life with gentleness and love. Which reminded me of another poem of mine. This one is from long ago, from my book, I Was Blown Back. Doesn't have a title. Being old isn't. The bodily sensations are pleasant, unpleasant, interpreted in reference to memory, obey the social contract of age, agreement, designation, imputed on reading a face in the mirror, which with advancing time, in reference to a fixture in the soul of self's melodious repetition, is an object of questioning. Searching look in eyes' brightness, chin's slump. All ages persist as one, always. There's nor old nor young, but additions. In the inventory of resignations, in the fact of the face, or as the face, the silence in what comes and goes, in and out the opening. Well, you are very kind to indulge me in my Shabbat, last day of retreat, musings and reflections and so on. Thank you. Now for the serious part of my talk. When I quote Dogen for you again, I have one last piece of Dogen to share with you this morning. And I'm going to read for you the entirety, which is a brief fascicle. I think it's the 93rd of Shobo Genzo. It's called Birth and Death. And he begins with a quotation. As a Buddha is in birth and death, there is no birth and death. He then gives a second quotation. As a Buddha is not in birth and death, a Buddha is not deluded by birth and death. He then, so those are two statements by two different Zen teachers in the past. He then says, those who want to become free from birth and death should understand the meaning of these words. If you search for a Buddha outside of birth and death, it will be like trying to go to the southern country of Yue with your spear headed toward the north, or like trying to see the Big Dipper while you are facing south. You will cause yourself to remain all the more in birth and death and miss the way of emancipation. Just understand that birth and death is itself nirvana. There is nothing such as birth and death to be avoided. And there is nothing such as nirvana to be sought. Only when you realize this are you free from birth and death. It is a mistake to suppose that birth turns into death. Birth is a phase that is an entire period in itself, with its own past and future. For this reason, in Buddha Dharma, birth is understood as beyond birth. Death is a phase that is an entire period in itself with its own past and future. For this reason, death is understood as beyond death. In birth, there is nothing but birth, and in death, there is nothing but death. Accordingly, when birth comes, face and actualize birth, and when death comes, face and actualize death. Do not avoid them. Do not desire them. This birth and death is the life of a Buddha. If you try to exclude it, you will lose the life of a Buddha. If you try to cling to it, remain in it, you will also lose the life of a Buddha. And what remains will be the mere form of a Buddha. Only when you don't avoid birth and death or long for it do you enter a Buddha's mind. However, do not analyze or speak about it. Just set aside your body and mind, forget about them, and throw them into the house of Buddha. Then all is done by the Buddha. When you follow this, you are free from birth and death and become a Buddha without effort or scheme. Who then remains in the mind? There is a simple way to become a Buddha. When you refrain from unwholesome actions, are not attached to birth and death, and are compassionate toward all sentient beings, respectful to seniors and kind to juniors, not excluding or desiring anything, with no thoughts or worries, you will be a Buddha. Seek nothing else. So that's the whole Dogen's fascicle called Birth and Death. And by now, you're also used to Dogen, I guess, that we don't need any commentary on that. We all understand that right away. And we see that it's challenging, right? Because we're human. Who doesn't cling to life and try to escape or avoid or forget about death? But as he says, there's no life to cling to. The life we are clinging to is not the life we are living. It is something that we have made up, constructed. It's an idea about our life. And the death we are afraid of and want to avoid similarly doesn't at all exist. It's just a construct, something we've made up by long human habit. There is no death. Thich Nhat Hanh always says this. He says, you know, there is no death, he says. The Heart Sutra says this, you know, no birth, no death. Death really doesn't exist. How could death exist? It's a contradiction in terms, right? Death exists. How could that be? By definition, death doesn't exist. There is no death. We are alive. We're 100% alive. And then not. Thich Nhat Hanh says there's no death, there's only continuation. Just as there's no birth, only continuation. I actually think somebody maybe knows this for sure, but I actually think that in Thich Nhat Hanh's community, they don't have birthdays. They have continuation days. Happy continuation day to you. Happy continuation day to you. I wonder if they sing like that. I don't know. Maybe in French or Vietnamese or something. So this is not really news to us, right, by now. Sitting here these many days, I think we know. I mean, we really know this. Our ideas maybe haven't entirely caught up with it, but we know that our life isn't just our life. We know that we all have an ancient past and an endless future. Living human beings are all the human beings who ever lived. And we carry the hopes and dreams and fears of people of the past inside our bodies. Sometimes when we're fighting with one another, it isn't us. It's our ancestors working out their problems through us. And when we really and truly realize how big our lives are, we won't be so afraid of birth and death anymore. We won't seek for anything outside of birth and death. And we'll be able to live when it's time to live. And die when it's time to die. And nobody knows, who knows, you know, what we will find at the time of our dying. Who among the living could ever understand such things? I want to thank everyone, again, who made this session possible. Our Enos, this is the first time they've organized this session. And they did such a great job. The Doan Ryo, all the priests who have led services, Chris and Jean for conducting Dokusan. Steve, who's been a super Jisha. John and Jane, who have been managing the online session. Hybrid events are not that easy to produce. And there have been many technical issues causing a certain amount of anxiety and extra work and problem solving. And the interface between the session here in the room at Santa Sabina and the session at other places around the world on the computer hasn't been too easy. I thought in the beginning when we were trying to figure out how to do hybrid events that I thought this is not going to be easy. It sounds easy, but it won't be easy. Because sitting zazen is an intimate practice. You don't want to feel like you're on TV, you know, when you're sitting zazen, right? You're sitting there, goodness knows what you're going through, and somebody's going to like tune in and watch, right? So it's a subtle thing. And on the other hand, don't we all want to share the practice with our Sangha brothers and sisters who are either too far away to come or are unable to come because of health or other age or whatever it is that they actually can't come? We want to not share the practice with them? Of course we want to share them with them. So it's a process. And we're all going to have to be patient with one another. This morning I talked to a number of people in the session who are in Europe. And I asked them how it's going. And they were all so happy and so appreciative of the session. So grateful to have the opportunity. They were amazed by the skill and effort of our technical team. They probably think we have armies of people doing this. And if there were any glitches, they didn't mind them at all. And so I'm really happy about that. And this morning, for the first time, John sent me the link to the Zoom room so I could watch the session for the first time on TV. And I watched it for a minute, and it was really amazing. It was amazing. I guess maybe we haven't been, we're here, right? So I can tell you, it's an amazing thing. People can see the altar. I was watching this, and I'm seeing James sitting there, you know, next to the altar. And then there's another camera. I thought one camera there would be. No, there's another camera where you can see the whole room, and you can see everybody sitting. So you can see both those images on your screen, and then you can have the gallery view, and then you can see all the different people, each one in a different country, in a different place, all sitting zazen with us. Wow, you know. It's so impressive, really. It's thrilling. So thanks to everybody who's been participating. So we've been sitting here. Very, 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 very fortunate people. Nothing to do all week but breathe. Enjoy the silence. Enjoy Dogen's profound teachings. But I think we all know that while we've been doing this, other people in other places in the world have been suffering a lot. Now the whole world's attention is focused on the people in Ukraine who have been living under brutal attack for weeks and weeks and weeks. And there are other people in the world who also have been suffering. There's other wars going on, not just in the Ukraine. Places where violence is a fact of life every day. We're not forgetting about that this week. And whether we've consciously done it or not, the point of our sitting is to dedicate the merit for the well-being of all concerned in wishing for the swiftest possible end to all the bloodshed. So let us now just take a moment to breathe in the suffering of the world and breathe out all our love and kindness and healing power. Maybe we can do what Frank is doing right now, put our hand on our heart if we want to, and feel the warmth and the love that's there. And as we breathe, strengthen that love. And as we exhale, send that love out to the people of Ukraine and to all the people everywhere traumatized by war and violence. We can imagine a luminous beam flowing forth from our heart into space and across the distance to all those who need it. So however we do it, let's breathe for a few moments with that in mind. Thank you. So we're coming toward the end of session pretty soon, so let's make sure we keep our silence strong, keep our focus strong. Today should be the most beautiful day of session, so let's keep ourselves here and not think about tomorrow. Session is 100% session until it's not. Just like Dogen says, life is an entire period with its own past and future. Death is an entire period with its own past and future. Session is an entire period with its own past and future. And then when session is over, our non-session life will be the only life there is with its own past and future. And as I said the other day, when we go home or wherever we're going, we'll forget about all of this. It'll be like a dream, just like the rest of the past of our life. You can't really verify that it happened. Did it? Although we experience the truth of our lives in a special way during session, we're always experiencing the truth of our life. Practice in daily life outside session does not feel at all like session. It's different. Don't cling to session. Don't cling to birth and death. Dogen writes at the end of Birth and Death, just set aside your body and mind, forget about it, and throw them into the house of Buddha, and everything will be done by Buddha. And then he says, and this is, it's so funny, you know, I don't know if you thought this was funny, but to me it was very funny. He says, there's a simple way to become a Buddha, and you're thinking, okay, well, simple way, that sounds good, you know. So there's a simple way to become a Buddha. It's very easy. All you have to do is the following. And then he says, refrain from unwholesome actions. Okay, maybe I can do that. Refrain from unwholesome actions. Don't be attached to birth and death. Compassionate toward all sentient beings. Respectful to seniors and kind to juniors, not excluding or desiring anything, with no thoughts or worries. Simple. Short list, right? Then you'll be a Buddha. Seek nothing else. So this is what we have been training to do. Little by little. Little by little. So thanks to everyone for a perfect session. I'm pretty sure that in the history of all of Zen and all of religion, there has never been a better session than this. I'm pretty sure. Don't you think? Pretty sure. Thank you very much for being here and for the effort that everyone has made. And thank you for your kind listening to my talks. And I'm sorry if you couldn't hear me, but that's okay. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Illusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them.